Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Khosa at 7 o'clock right now on this particular day, the 20th of November. Back in 1886, Sherlock Holmes' first story would be accepted for publishing at a cost of £25. That would, of course, be the story titled A Study in Scarlet. In 1929, on this day, Salvador Dali, the painter, would have his first one-man show take place. 1931, on this day, Rolls-Royce would announce their intention to buy Bentley Motors. Interestingly enough, today those two companies are owned by two separate German manufacturers. 1969, on this day, Pele would score his 1,000th goal. 1995, on this day, Princess Diana would controversially admit on live television to having cheated on Prince Charles. That would have turned out differently as a story, considering Charles's current position today. 2001, on this day, Josh Groban gave us his debut album, which sold 5 million copies, titled Josh Groban. 2002, on this day, Die Another Day, the last of the James Bond movies starring Pierce Brosnan, would be released today. It was the 20th James Bond movie, interestingly enough. And in 2017, on this particular day, Tencent would become the first Asian company to hit a valuation of $500 billion. That valuation would have since gone up between then and now. I'll give you a valuation number on that a little later on. In 2022, on this day, Bob Iger would return to Disney after just a year's vacation, coming back to seemingly rescue the company. We'll see how that story plays out and what that end looks like. And on the same day, the leader of the country Equatorial Guinea, the president of Equatorial Guinea, would be re-elected at the age of 80, extending his 43-year reign as president, making him the longest standing president or statesman ever. You tune into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we are taking a look at 91 results. We're going to be chatting to the founder and CEO, Hendrik du Toit, around the performance of 91 in their first half of the new financial year. Then we've got a conversation with chief economist at Rand Merchant Bank, Azaya Mhlanga, around the business sentiment as business confidence index data came through today that suggests that we are in more positive territory, but we still haven't hit that 50 points mark just yet. Then we've got a conversation with Simone Cooper from Standard Bank around the role of entrepreneurship and small to medium enterprises in the development of Africa and in driving African economic growth. And then we wrap the show up with an executive lounge segment with Dr. Thomas Funke. He is the CEO of the SA Cane Growers Association. We often speak to him about matters related to the sugar cane and sugar industry in South Africa, but this time we're going to be speaking to him on a personal level and getting to know him a little bit better.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
We kick off the show, as we always do, with a sense of how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro to take a look at the market movements throughout the day and see if we can make sense of them. Uncle David, good evening. Lovely to speak to you, as always. This is certainly one of the first times in my lifetime, barring the pandemic, that I've seen a CPI print below 3%. But I imagine you can remember a couple of times when this has happened.
I have to go back to the 70s, I think. I remember when I was at university, actually, which was in the 60s, inflation in those days was always, 6%. And then, Jimmy, we got into the 70s and 80s, where 12% was the norm. You know, those were the famous years that Volcker eventually had to address. So, yeah, it's to get it down to 2%, I think, or 3% would be wonderful. But I still think tomorrow, Lesetja, the very miserly central bank, is only going to give us another 25 points.
Don't say that.
He's like a strict headmaster, you know. You can only have one toffee or you can only have one sweetie, you know. So, but maybe is a little nervous about what lies ahead, you know, particularly in the global markets and that. But it was a very good number, brought down mainly by, fuel, by petrol, which I think was down about 19% on the month. And that's very volatile. Food was also a little bit better. In other words, the rate of growth was slower. But nice to see it below three. Yeah.
Mm. You mentioned that, obviously, that rate decision that is going to come out tomorrow. We do know that our Reserve Bank governor is on the conservative side. And as you said, there are a couple of those factors that are still out there. I mean, I look at the CPI print out of the UK that suggests that they are still battling with inflation. It's still sticky on their side of the world. I mean, ticking up from 1.7 to north of 2% on that side suggests that maybe the inflation battle isn't completely won. And yes, maybe we want to be more cautious.
Jimmy, I don't think any central governor knows what's happening. I think coming out of COVID, and I really mean that, I think they're all battling, you know, pulling levers. And even now, they're not quite sure whether the decrease in inflation, you know, is luck or whether it's their policies, you know. And I think we misunderstand or can't grasp what COVID did when they closed the global economy and all the disruptions it's brought. I still think we're trying to get out of it, and there are a lot of issues that they don't understand and will take time to figure it out. I think they'll go back to to their books. There are no manuals that are going to help them. You know, there's no books have been written about this. So I think every central bank governor is still very, very nervous about, you know, where inflation is.
I think the book is currently being written, to your point, Uncle David, is that this is the time that we will reflect on 20, 30, 40 years from now to say this is how things were handled. But when we look at those readings and we look at just what is happening from, you bring up the pandemic, and I had a look back, and the last time we had inflation below 3% was the pandemic, and prior to the pandemic was in the middle of the Mbeki presidency in 2004, when President Mbeki had just been re-elected for his second term. So it was at the height of South Africa's economic development. I think we might have had some of the best economic growth around that time as well. But the numbers clearly suggest that we haven't seen this inflation level, barring the pandemic, in 20 years.
In those days, in the Mbeki days, we were growing at 5%. Remember, we were in the midst of the commodity super cycle. Things were really strong at the moment. We had the World Cup in 2010, and it just gave a reflection of where we were. And then, of course, we got the 2008-09 financial crisis, global financial crisis, and never quite recovered from that. And other issues started to contribute, you know, to our difficult times as well, you know, from then on. So, yeah, listen, credit to the governor, you know, full credit. I think he's a marvelous man, and I think also credit to the Treasury. I always give him compliments, and I think that he's never been influenced by, politics around him. I have to say that for Powell as well, and, you know, that's why you need an independent central bank, that they're not swayed by political motives. So let's hope we can maintain it, you know. The rand still 18.10, which is a bit of a concern, but oil prices are still in the low levels. I'm talking about Brent and WTI, you know, energy prices are still down. So there's possibility that, you know, this can continue at these lower levels.
I was coming to that, Uncle David, around the rand to say you print the best. Granted, our rand is politically driven, but you surely, when you print the best inflation print of the last 20 years for your country, coming off of highs of almost 8% to be at 25 or nearly 25 to 30% of that level, surely the market would have reacted a little bit better. I'm a little disappointed.
It's the dollar, you know. And the dollar's very strong at the moment, and there are a number of reasons. It's also the belief that rates will not come down as far as everybody's anticipated in the US. They will come down, but also that its growth is outpacing anything else. You know, Europe's under pressure, Japan under pressure. You can see Europe in a bit of a mess. The rest of the world still very worried. You know, China not growing. So as a result of that, you know, simply on growth initiatives and considering what Trump's going to do, you're going to get money flowing into the US, you know, for reasons other than just purely interest rates. And I think that's propping up the dollar as well. We can expect the dollar, you know, under these circumstances to maintain its strength. And that's going to weigh on all I don't want to say only South Africa, but all, call it poorer countries, emerging markets, what, you know, whatever definition, and as well as the euro. You know, if you look at the euro, it's 105. I mean, that's weak. That's really weak, and it's heading, you know, this could easily head back to, you know, to parity, which is we haven't seen for some time. So yeah, it's out of our control.
as it seems to be that most things are lately, where we have to kind of sit back and say, let's see how things unfold. Looking at commodities, though, we're seeing that there's some bit of hope in some of the commodities, the gold price seemingly coming back after that disastrous tumble when President Trump was announced. The dollar strength, is that sustainable?
It is. I think so. You know, I think if we go into a very strong 2025, which I think we're going to go into, remember, rates will come down in the US, growth will continue. I think that it's, you know, the U.S. Will attract a lot of funds, a lot of investment funds. That's going to be the preferred place to be, and that's going to maintain dollar strength. The only thing that can swing it around, and you touched on it, is commodities. You know, if China could do something, but I still think they're battling at the moment. I think that you know, just historically, I think they're. Economic policies are starting to catch up with them, probably spending and investing more than they could actually earn is telling. And Mr. Xi has to pull some, you know, some fancy levers as well. But and we rely on it a lot, and Europe relies on a lot, and that's why I think they're pretty weak at the moment. So they caught, you know, Europe's caught between worries about tariff increases from Mr. Trump, their friend, and on the other side, they've got China, you know, also pretty weak. So I think that just adds to the attraction of the United States.
We spoke about this before the election, saying that if Donald J. Trump was to return to politics, we would all be in for an interesting 2025, and it seems that's exactly how it's shaping up. We'll leave the conversation there, Uncle David. Thank you so much for the time and the insights, as always. Lovely catching up with you. We look forward to seeing how these stories continue to play out. But that was David Shapiro of Sasfin Wealth joining us to take a look at the market movements throughout the day, as well as what could potentially be driving market conditions.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
91, the asset manager that is the largest asset manager on the African continent by assets under management, even larger than the PIC that we know, just shy of 3 trillion rands in assets under management, gave us their update for the half year ended September 2024, their start to the new financial year. I have the privilege of speaking to the 91 founder and CEO, Hendrik du Toit, to take a look at that company's performance over the last 6 months and get a sense of how they're feeling going into the second half of the year. Well, many good evening. Lovely to speak to you as always. Last year, you and I caught up. Assets under management were down 8%. This year, they're starting the year off 3% up compared to the last period. How are you feeling in the first half of the year?
Jimmy, good day and nice to talk to you again. It's better. I think the world is starting to improve, but we're still struggling on the flow side, on the new business side, internationally and around the world, because investors have been very risk averse and been keeping their cash in bank accounts, money market accounts, and bonds. But with the markets doing better, that helps our revenues, and we're starting to see a pipeline of new business, which is exciting. So I'm definitely smiling more, and the sun is shining in London today. So,
well, Manny, you mentioned the outflows and the flows just being a bit of a tricky situation. When we look at those net outflows, 23% increase in outflows between this 6 months and the 6 months starting the previous financial year. Net outflows north of £5.3 billion.
Pounds.
Any concerns there? I mean, obviously part of it is natural cycle, but you don't want all of that.
No, of course. We need to be positive in. I think there was a whole lot of, in our case, and we're at the end of that, where investors have really just not brought the, you know, We've got a structural outflow from an asset management book. It's pensions of people, etc. And the outflow rates were basically stable since 22 when we had our last big inflow year. And the inflows dropped off when interest rates increased in the developed world. Interest rates were near zero. People seeked in most of the portfolio we supply is risk assets, emerging market equities, public equities, which are risky. People were going for it, and then literally the flows just fell down to a much lower level. That is now, I think the last 6 months was probably the crescendo of that. And we're now seeing across the industry, and specifically where people compete with us, we're starting to see a turnaround, and we've also felt a better pipeline. But this was a 6 months not to remember. And we were fortunate that the markets are higher, and therefore actually our revenues were protected. We were benefiting from higher markets and losing on the flow side. And I think this year, I hope we can turn that around. We definitely feel confident that things are better looking ahead, but no guarantees in this business. It's a competitive business, and it has been a challenging period for us.
When you and I caught up last year and we were reflecting on just the outlook, actually it was earlier this year we were reflecting on the outlook and the Government of National Unity, you mentioned that you were still quite concerned about emerging markets and whether or not they would be able to keep pace with what's happening around the world. Are you still feeling that way, especially taking into account all the developments that have been happening in the likes of China and South Africa?
Jimmy, I think if you look at the last 6 months, emerging markets have performed, including our South African market, exceptionally well. And in fact, we have in the equity markets done better than even the US. Since the presidential election, the US has had a very strong run, fueled by a South African called Elon Musk and his friend Donald Trump. But emerging markets have actually, the asset price movements have started to recover and look a lot better than even a year ago. I think the emerging economies are uncertain because of the feared tariff policies or trade protection policies that the United States is considering to impose. And I think that we need to get clarity and certainty. And clearly, the US is putting the squeeze on China in order to slow down the eventual, reality that China will probably overtake the US as the largest economy. So that's where we are. But there are investment opportunities across markets. And what we've seen in markets is that performance has broadened. It's not anymore just the big Magnificent Seven or US tech that doing things, even US small caps. UK has actually started doing better, and so has the emerging market complex. So actually we're in much more interesting markets for an active manager than we were a year ago.
Speaking of the UK, there were some inflation numbers that came out of the UK and South Africa today. And looking at the UK, not doing so well on the inflation side, coming in at 2.3%, inflation rising from 1.7%, but the exact opposite happening in South Africa. Is that something that has you concerned as an asset manager that kind of plays in both those demographics or both those geographies?
I think the South Africa is a very well run monetary policy, and the governor has been conservative, and he's now getting the space to be more flexible on interest rates. In the UK, we must see whether this is a trend or not. I mean, they had much lower inflation number recently. So I think in both economies, I'm not particularly concerned about the inflation. I think the real concern is if the US imposes tariff policies which are not that well thought through, they're going to fuel inflation there, and that will have implications for world markets. So I think this is not, the biggest story in markets, particularly not one number.
Well, Manny, I want to look at some developments from the 91 family before we wrap up the conversation. Big, big, big news announced with today's numbers, that Sanlam agreement, a long-term agreement. Take us through what's happening there. Take us through the rationale behind that agreement and what you hope to achieve.
Jimmy, clearly, most large financial institutions in South Africa are clients of 91s. We serve them in areas where they want investment access, our investment expertise. And in the case of Sanlam, which we had a very large relationship with, they decided that they want to focus on what they do best, which is insurance and other things. And active ma asset management wasn't something that they wanted to continue doing. They had a conversation with us, and because of the scale of the opportunity, we said, well, let's craft interesting win-win deals for both parties. In our case, we receive a very large amount of money, 400 billion to run and actually, in effect, acquire their active investment management businesses. They take shares in us, which means they're long-term committed, and their future flows, in future, they will give us a, we will be their primary active manager, which means we have preferred status in their distribution, and therefore we can access a market that we don't normally sell 91 product to, which is their savings clients and their insurance clients. And we also get some support from the insurance company to accelerate the growth of some of our international credit strategies, which is incredibly valuable in this day and age and in this world. And we have a very good and demanding partner to work with, but it is essentially an agreement rather than it doesn't change the independence of 91. It doesn't change we just have a shareholder with a real interest supporting us on the business front who has given or sent 400 billion our way, of which a significant portion is international assets.
Well, it's certainly going to be an interesting second half to the year and potentially for the next couple of years. We wish you the best of luck in the next half of the year. We look forward to catching up at the end of the year. It's certainly going to be a lot to reflect on, and I think there's going to be a lot more moving parts that are going to take effect between now and the next time we speak. But until that next time it does come around, thank you so much for the time and for the insights. That was Hendrik du Toit, who is the founder and CEO of 91, joining us to take a look at their first half of the year's performance, as well as what the second half of the year could shape up to look like.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We're taking a look at the latest numbers in terms of business confidence. The team at RMB and BER put together a business confidence index on a regular basis, and they've put out the latest number for the fourth quarter of 2024. We're taking a look at that. I'm joined on the line by Chief Economist at RMB, Isaiah Mhlanga, to take a look at this and try and make sense of the numbers. Good evening, Isaiah. Thanks so much for taking the time. The numbers suggest that we are happier, but we're not happy. So we're slightly less grumpy, but we're not yet at that point where we can comfortably say we're happy.
Indeed. And I think there is an important differentiator between me and you. This is the sentiment of, business executives in the South African economy that ultimately make investment decisions. And at 45%, it suggests that just under half of the respondents are satisfied with prevailing business conditions. But there are other things that are important to pick up from the release. The first one is three sub-sectors are now above 50%, which is the neutral level. Remember, above 50 is where we expect expansion in the economy, and below 50, it's where we don't expect expansion. Out of those three, wholesalers are at 60, retailers are at 54, Both of these have increased by 9 points relative to the last quarter. And then if you look at building contractors, which is the third one that saw an improvement at 51, saw a 10-point improvement since the last quarter. And the last two is where we see continued, underperformance. Manufacturing, though it improved from 28 to 36, is still quite low. New vehicle dealers moved the other way around, in the opposite direction. It actually declined from 27 to 23. Which is, a reflection of the high interest rate environment. Even though we have seen the first cut, it's still quite high to boost confidence in that subsector.
Now, Isaiah, you mentioned the rate cuts, and we'll come to those in a second. I want to look into some of those subsectors that have seen a positive sentiment, especially moving above that neutral zone. I think the biggest mover here, or the most surprising one here, would be the building contractors. We kind of came out of the elections and we were told we're going into the industrial era of South Africa. We're going to go into a lot of infrastructure development, and that kind of in the past has never really filtered through to sentiment as much, because we've always had these logistical lags and all of those things. But now we're finally seeing that building contractors themselves are quite optimistic.
Absolutely. And if we look at the long-term average confidence level for building contractors is 43, which means now at 51, it is above the long-term average. So that's another thing that we need to actually recognize. Yes, confidence still remain quite low, and yes, it's slow to recover, but we also see a different dynamic where domestic business executives tend to be slow to update their expectations relative to offshore investors. I guess given the disappointment from lack of implementations in the years gone by, that would be understandable. So there is a slight divergence between what we see on the confidence index and gross fixed capital formation. But to your point, building contractors are showing quite a bit of confidence that we haven't seen in many years. Actually, that is much higher than the long-term average. And part of the story is, the reform work that is coming, that is boosting construction work. But also there still remains some pessimism even in that subsector because of the construction mafia. It's one element that the respondents have raised to say it remains a concern for their sector.
Isaiah, I want to look at the momentum shift. I mean, this is one indicator, right? So the business confidence index is one indicator. We're seeing that today's inflation print surprised to the downside. We're expecting an interest rate decision tomorrow that could, in all likelihood, be an interest rate cut. But on top of those sorts of data points that are coming out, we're also seeing things like Fitch and Standard & Poor revising our outlook to positive. These small little things, you can't help but start to see that maybe there is some momentum that is building up. Is that something that you guys are seeing from an analytics point of view and just from an overall consensus point of view, that slowly but surely we are putting together those building blocks to have the momentum we need?
Indeed. I guess it's a matter of once bitten, twice shy. We wait to actually see the economic statistics improving before we can update our expectations. But there are enough leading indicators. The most important one is, as we are speaking, we have the lights on and they haven't gone off for a very long time. And it appears that they are not going to go off, for quite some time into the future. And in our own expectations, we no longer expect load shedding. So that's a big tick. It's not something that is, by the way, on the margins. It's a big reform. It has big impact on the economy. And then second up, if we look at logistics, waiting times for ships at ports have improved. Security incidences at railway lines have also improved, which says there is something that is being done. Even though we are just at the beginning of the reforms in the logistics sector, there is some reason to actually say there is some improvement that is coming through. Those are the structural issues. The other ones where we are not yet, beginning to make some inroads is the water sector, particularly in Gauteng. One of the big risks that we have to address, from a reform perspective, again, respondents have raised this as one of the concerns and potentially inhibitors to economic growth and their operations. So we have to see those also coming through. But overall, there is something that is happening in the economy that is positive. Financial markets have also responded positively following the GNU formation, and as they say, or as we see, financial markets respond quite quickly. They price in what is yet to come. Bond yields, if you look at 10-year bond yields, they've declined more than 100 basis points since. The currency has strengthened. It was above 19 at some point. It has strengthened before the volatility that came with U.S. elections. But we can see across many of the South African markets, they've improved. And then you have your S&P that are now changing the outlook to positive. And a change of outlook to positive suggests that if we continue to see an improvement, the next tracking action will be an upgrade, which is a big thing. It's not something that is marginal.
Isaiah, we obviously still have a couple of things to contend with, things like getting off the grey list and dealing with some of the structural challenges that persist with the likes of Transnet. But I want to get your thoughts around your economic outlook for South Africa, understanding that we're now more than 100 days into the government of national unity. We're seeing some of these driving factors. We're seeing some of these other positive elements all coming together seemingly at the right time. How are you feeling about the South African story going into Q1 of 2025 and possibly even Q2 of 2025?
We are quite positive. Obviously, coming off a low base, our expectations for this year are just at about a 1% economic growth. Next year, we move to 1.9%, so you could round it up to 2%. And then beyond that, we go just over 2% to 2.2%. And what these economic growth expectations do not price in is the potential improvement in the logistics sector, in the water sector. We haven't taken that into account, which means once we solve that, there is upside risk to our growth expectations.
So we do still have some work to do, but we can still get ahead of it. Isaiah, before I let you go, I want to take a look at a quick one that could potentially be of useful information or some useful insights, rather. What should we be avoiding here at this point to keep up the momentum? Because we've seen this often, where it starts to look positive, it starts to look like we're on the right track, and then we slip up and we score a couple of own goals. What would you say would be critical here to sustain this kind of momentum?
Failure to implement the reforms in the logistics space or to delay their implementation thereof will be a negative for us. Failure to deal with the water issues will be a negative for us. But we also need to manage our fiscals in a much more conservative way to make sure that we reduce our debt levels in a way that will reduce our debt service costs. That is important. Monetary policy essentially has achieved its own objectives. You look at the inflation print that was released today, 2.8%. And then if you look at the average forecast over the next 3 years, at 4.5% or lower. So no much issues as far as inflation is concerned. And once we have done with those, we need to deal with our labor markets. They are quite inflexible, and we need the ability of the economy to generate enough jobs to reduce the levels of unemployment and inequality that remain a social risk for the country. That would also contribute. But unfortunately, there are no quick fixes there. We need to do the hard work to make sure that we fix those and provide the skills that the economy requires.
There's no quick fixes, there's no easy way out, but if we keep on the right trajectory and we keep focused on the bigger picture and the objective, we can surely get there. We'll leave the conversation there, Isaiah. Thanks as always for the time and for the insights. Isaiah Mhlanga, Chief Economist at Rand Merchant Bank, joining me to take a look at the latest business confidence index that isn't yet above the 50 points mark, but is dangerously close to getting there.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
Usually we do this on a Thursday where we look at SMEs, but given that tomorrow we have a national public lecture by former Minister Naledi, or Dr. Naledi Pandor, we won't be having a show, so I thought we'd have this conversation today. We're going to be taking a look at the role of small, medium and micro enterprises in the development and growth of Africa. I'm joined on the line by the head of business and commercial banking for South Africa at Standard Bank, Simone Cooper, to take a look at this and see if we can unpack some of these key insights. Good evening, Simone. Thanks so much for taking the time. Simone, let's start with the role of SMMEs as growth drivers in Africa. Obviously, everyone has a critical part to play in growth in their own individual countries and individual spaces, but SMMEs, particularly in Africa, have a special role to play.
Good evening, Jimmy, and it's great to be here firstly. Absolutely. I think that if we look at SMMEs in particular, we understand that they drive a significant amount of growth within both the South African economy and across the continent as well. They're also significant drivers of employment. So when you look at SMMEs and SMEs, they employ a lot of people. And so they're critically important for the development of communities, for the development of these economies, and they drive critical things such as innovation, which you see a lot of across the continent. And they are the lifeblood of driving a significant number of new things that we see within the continent itself.
Simone, SMEs have an array of challenges. I mean, anyone that's tried to start a business knows that it certainly isn't easy. And some of these challenges SMEs battle on a continuous basis, and they need to be able to push past these challenges. Can you take us through what some of the challenges are, but more importantly, how those challenges can be approached so that they don't stay as challenges, that they become opportunities at some point?
I think that if you look at the SME landscape, for anyone who's tried to start a new business or tried to run a business, you'll often hear things around regulation, compliance, and the like coming up as big challenges for small businesses. And when you're looking at small businesses, I think that the landscape is tough and is difficult for them to operate in. And so what we from a Standard Bank perspective try to do is to help businesses navigate that. Trying to help them with registering a business. How do they grow a business? Other things that always come up as challenges are things such as access to finance. So it's important around SMEs making sure that they've got good record keeping, that they've got good financials, and that they, with a banking partner, putting their turnover through a formalized bank account so that we can have the ability to understand what's happening in that business, to be able to offer things such as finance into the future. The other big thing that comes up, I think, for SMEs as a big challenge is, particularly in South Africa, but also across the continent, is infrastructure. If you take our South African context, up until about 6 months ago, you had huge challenges from a power perspective. And those challenges, whilst may not be an immediate challenge, there's still lots of opportunity for businesses in terms of investing in sustainable solutions from a power perspective. But you are also seeing things like water and other challenges coming to the fore now. And so as a bank, we try to make sure that we've got specialization and areas and experts that can help those businesses to understand what is available to de-risk.
Simone, you mentioned something earlier about the finance side of things and having things documented, going through a bank account and all of that. Finance is a huge challenge for SMEs. Accessing finance, accessing the right kinds of finance, and accessing finance when you need it the most for your business can often be the difference between an SME surviving and an SME just not making it past a certain time frame. When we look at the financial side of things, what does Standard Bank have in terms of solutions that can benefit SMEs?
So you spot on. I think that access to finance comes up as one of the big challenges for businesses, and I'll talk about some of the others. But I think from a finance perspective, at Standard Bank, we try to make it as easy as possible for SMEs. So as I said, if you're using Standard Bank from a banking perspective, putting your turnover through your accounts. We've got digital lending solutions, scored lending solutions, which run in the background and provide finance based on what we can see going through your account. So today you can go onto your internet banking or onto your app, and you're able to digitally apply for a loan. In some instances, you can see how much you qualify for. And that is all based on what you do with us and how you bank with us. So we have those sorts of things. We also have innovative solutions. One of them is called BizFlex, which is a solution that is based on your turnover. So it's a variable repayment loan. So you take out a loan and you repay that from a variable perspective, which is based on the cash flow that you have in a particular month. So this month, perhaps your turnover is a bit lower. We'll collect a bit less from you. Next month, when you might be having a boom going into December, we'll potentially take some more money back. So it's a variable repayment mechanism aligned to a business's turnover.
That's quite an innovative solution. Not very many service providers look at businesses from that perspective, because as you said, the things are different. So a business will have different cyclical kinds of challenges. Standard Bank is, if I'm not mistaken, the largest bank on the African continent by assets, which puts you in a very unique position to be able to leverage that into helping not just South African businesses, but continental businesses. Are you seeing that on the African continent, there's a bigger need for certain types of businesses or for certain areas to be tackled or problems to be solved by smaller businesses?
Absolutely. I think, as you said, from a Standard Bank perspective, we operate in a number of markets across the continent. We also believe that Africa is our home and we drive our growth, and we do that through small businesses and some of your larger family-owned businesses too. And we see businesses that are expanding across the continent. You have a lot of businesses operating in the manufacturing environment, in the agriculture environment, and doing trade across the different markets in the continent. What we are able to do, and I think we've paid our own school fees by operating for a very long time across the continent, is having local people who understand the markets in those particular areas. And we can link you up with those local teams. Our business and commercial banking in the various different jurisdictions that we run, as I said, is run by local people who understand it. And so being able to link businesses who want to go and expand into other markets is critical. We've also recently launched an offshore proposition in Mauritius. And you have a lot of businesses now that are wanting to take advantage of having a presence within a jurisdiction such as that for centralized procurement, centralized treasury. So we're really looking at how do we support businesses as they grow, not only here in South Africa or in a particular country, but across the continent too.
Tailored solutions for the African continent and for African businesses. You have to love to see it. We'll leave it at that, Simone. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. That's Simone Cooper, who is the head of business and commercial banking for South Africa at Standard Bank, joining us to take a look at the impact that they have, or the impact they're aiming to have, on small to medium businesses.
This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
Hi, my name is David Getonga from BitKE in Kenya. I'm on the MoneyWeb podcast with Karen Ryan. At BitKE, we educate East Africans on crypto, and we'll be discussing stablecoins adoption and what's happening in East Africa.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's a Wednesday evening, and you know what that means. It means it's time for another Executive Lounge segment where we get to speak to some of the leading executives in the country. Some of them are based around the world, some of them are based in South Africa, but either way, we get to speak to them, get to know them a little bit better, and get to know what they do when they're not up to their day-to-day tasks. This week's executive is the CEO of the Cane Growers Association, Dr. Thomas Funke. You might recognize him when he joins me now in a moment from the previous conversations we've had around the South African sugar industry, but today we're going to get to know him a little bit better and see if he's got a sweet tooth. Good evening, Dr. Funke. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with how you got involved in this particular sector.
Yes, good evening. Yeah, long story, already 14 years in the industry. Time flies. But previously, I was actually a lecturer at the University of Pretoria. Completed my doctorate there, and also did a stint in the USA at the Missouri University. It's a very strong agricultural-based university, so lots of econometric modeling that we did there, and also worked for BFAP. And at the time in 2010, a good friend of mine actually moved to the sugar industry. She's now active in RCL Foods. And through her, I got the opportunity for a job interview at Cane Growers. And yeah, as they say, the rest is history.
Dr. Funga, what's the one thing you've enjoyed about the career that you've had? It doesn't have to be with the current association. It can be pretty much any real memory that you have in your career that you think back to and think, that was a fun time in life.
Yeah, I think agriculture has always been close to my heart. You know, my family from my mother's side were farmers in northern KZN. My uncle's also a sugarcane farmer, so that sort of stuck to me. And when I was looking around after school and, you know, early days of adulthood, agriculture really sort of stuck to me, and that's that started my career and my interest in agriculture economics. And then thinking about my career, I think working with BFAP and closely, you know, associated with such a great organization was really one of the milestones. Professor Ferdy Meyer, who today still heads up the organization, is really a great leader and guided me a lot in my thinking, as well as Johan Kirsten, Professor Johan Kirsten, who's now at BER down in Stellenbosch. And then obviously, you know, getting into the sugar industry, never a dull moment, always a crisis, you know, if it's imports or a pest that's attacking the sugar cane or social unrest or flooding or electricity outages. Yeah, it's really been interesting, and every year brings its own challenges. So that's really kept me on my toes, and it's an interesting sector. I think also what's interesting is the whole relationship with the processor. That's something you don't really have in other agricultural industries in South Africa, that regulated environment. And that really makes for some unique thinking around the boardroom table as to how one can come up with solutions. And yeah, it's quite unique in South Africa. And I think it irritates many purists who believe in market forces. But nevertheless, it's what we have. It's important for the jobs that we create and employ. And yeah, that's really added to the flavor, I guess, of the career.
Thomas, what do you do when you're not thinking about work? How do you separate yourself from the day-to-day? What do you do to unwind?
I'm a big sailor, so yachting is my passion. I've competed in many world championships this year also. My brother and I sailed together on a two-man boat, and we represented South Africa and Sweden at the World Championships. And yeah, I run the youth group at the Point Yacht Club in Durban. My two boys are also now active sailors on their little boats, so it gives me great pleasure to teach them that sport. And it's a family sport, you know. You get to know nature, everything around it, the tactics, dealing with the wind, moving forward without an engine. And that's really that's really my great passion in life.
What would you say is your favorite food or favorite meal?
That's an interesting one, but being South African, we obviously love our braai and our poiki. I think that really sits well with me. Jan Braai is a big hero of mine. All his interesting recipes I try to recreate at home. And yeah, really interesting stuff that comes together. Obviously good to add some sugar to all of this and to make it a bit sweeter. But yeah, always good to be around the braai fire.
Thomas, having such a big passion for sailing and having all the experience that you do in the sailing space, I imagine you've traveled quite a bit. What would you say is your favorite destination that you've traveled to?
Europe is always on top of the list. Denmark was really one of my favorite sailing venues. We did the World Championships there in 2010 and also got really good results. So that's really on top of my list. But down under, Australia, a few years ago, just before COVID, 2019-20, we sailed in Perth and Fremantle and yeah, very similar to our conditions here in Durban. So really great sailing, warm water, and strong breeze. That's what we like. So, yeah, I would say Australia and Denmark definitely rate at the top of the list.
Where does Germany rank?
Yeah, Germany, not so great for sailing. In 2014, we sailed actually in Kiel. We had the World Championships there, and yeah, it was just miserable. And our German friends who travel with us to these events always tell us, you know, we've got such wonderful conditions in South Africa. And they really sail in miserable weather. So, no, Germany is towards the bottom of favorite places.
I suppose you don't regret having moved, having the family move from Germany to South Africa. Now we have such great weather here. Thomas, what are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a book called Why Nations Fail. Just really trying to get to grips with where our country is going, exploring what has made it work in other countries. And I guess for us and agriculture being the backbone of many economies worldwide, it's important to understand those nuances. And that's really what I'm trying to get to, I guess, at the end of the day, is trying to understand how can one make the lives of people better who participate in your industry? Because, you know, at the end of the day, for us as a grower organization with our 24,000 small-scale farmers in our sector, it's quite important to understand, the conditions that they work under in detail. And hopefully, you know, these type of books always interesting and they bring a different perspective to it. Yeah. So that's if I'm not reading sailing books, then I like to read those type of books.
Speaking of perspective, is there one particular person or perhaps a group of people that you say would really inspire you if you could think back to just some of the advice or the inspirational learnings that you've acquired in your many, many years?
Yeah, I think earlier I said Professor Meyer from BFAP and Professor Jan Kirsten were definitely in the early days individuals who inspired me. And later my career at Cane Grows, farmers who have served the industry and participated in the structures for many years also form part of that circle, I guess. And really their knowledge, their in-depth knowledge of, 4 or 5 decades of participation in the sector brings a lot of value to the table. I feel sometimes that, thinking out of the box and blue sky is something that is important. But one can't always do that if you don't have this historical background. So we've got a particular farmer from the Midlands area, Tim Murray, who's definitely been one of my mentors, and really appreciate his insights. And then recently I lost a colleague, Olivia Finnemore. She was in a car accident with her family and unfortunately passed away. But she was also a huge inspiration in my career. We worked closely together for 14 years and, extremely unfortunate, but I like to hold on to the memories that I had with her and really, the learnings that we've had together, I guess, in running the organization.
Thomas, before I let you go, what would you say is your favorite drink?
My favorite drink is something that we're developing at the moment. It's an energy drink made from sugarcane. It's been our sort of project for the last 4 years, and it's coming to commercial phase now. So extremely interesting. It's a world first. We crushing sugar cane and then converting that into a drink and bringing it home to the people who plant sugar cane. So that's definitely one of those drinks that ranks on top of my list. So look out for that when it gets launched. It's very exciting.
We'll certainly be looking out for that, looking forward to seeing what that comes out like. We haven't had the best of reputations from the energy drink world in the past, but this could be a different thing, and I'm looking forward to that. We'll leave the conversation there. Thomas, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. It's been lovely getting to know you a little bit better. That's Dr. Thomas Funke, who is the CEO of the South African Cane Growers Association, joining us for this week's Executive Lounge.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs. Yeah, I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA here on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with Ketso Gordon, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the South African SME Fund. Among the topics of conversation, why small businesses need to be paid in 30 days, the art of blended financing, and why scalability is not necessarily important in small businesses.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
Hi, my name is David Getonga from BitKE in Kenya. I'm on the MoneyWeb podcast with Kieran Ryan. At BitKE, we educate East Africans on crypto, and we'll be discussing stablecoins adoption and what's happening in East Africa.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights. SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We've come to the end of our show, folks. If you've missed any of our conversations, you can catch up with those conversations online. We've also come to the end of our week. Just a reminder that tomorrow is the annual SAFM lecture that will be delivered by Dr. Naledi Panda. So that means we will not have a business update tomorrow to get through. And that means that we're going to be missing you until next week. But as I said, you can catch up on the conversations that we've had in the meantime. They're up online. They're up on all of our social platforms. They're on the MoneyWeb website. They're on the SABC platform. So you can go revisit those conversations. It's coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Hose is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, good night.